Welcome to Nexus 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African-American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. This episode series of Nexus 818 Podcast introduces us to the Montfort Port Marines. In 1941, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt issued the order to admit African-Americans into the U.S. Marine Corps. The Marines were the last branch of the service to include African-Americans. Between 1942 and 1949, approximately 20,000 African-American men were admitted into the Marine Corps. These soldiers were trained at the segregated base at Montfort Point in Jacksonville, North Carolina. For their valiant service to our nation, these Marines were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal in November 2011. I am pleased to welcome to episode 27 two members of the Montfort Point Marine Association. My guests tonight are Mallory K. Emberger, granddaughter of Montfort Point Marine Private Maurice L. Burns Sr., and U.S. Marine veteran Kelly Atkinson. Both are members of the Montfort Point Marine Association. Welcome, Mallory and Kelly.
Good evening.
Hi, Dr. JC. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being on. I'd like to start with a few interesting facts about African-Americans in the Marines. April 1776, the first African-American to fight in a Marine role was John Martin, also known as Kito. He was a slave from Delaware. Second, during the American Revolution, there were 2,000 Continental Marines and at least 13 were African-Americans. Third, in 1796, John McHenry was appointed Secretary of War by President George Washington. He issued an act stating no Negro, mulatto, or Indians are to be recruited. For the next 144 years, the U.S. Marine Corps did not accept Black men. Extraordinary. So many people know about the Tuskegee Airmen and the Buffalo Soldiers, but few know about the courageous Montfort Port Marines. So I'd like to start, before we get into that particular battalion, I'd like to start by hearing some of the history of Blacks in the Marines. I shared a few interesting facts, but Kelly, I'm sure you can tell us more about that.
Sure, absolutely.
And I may be wrong, I refer to them as a battalion, but I know that a battalion has a specific meaning. Were they a battalion or were they?
They were actually the entire Marine Corps. Was it just a battalion?
Okay, sorry.
So, what I will say, African Americans in the Marine Corps has a rich history. When we talk about the first Black man, when we talk about John Martin, what people don't realize is John Martin was assigned to the naval vessel USS Reprisal. And that naval vessel was captured by Captain Lambert Wicks, and they were tasked with getting gunpowder for George Washington's army. They were successful at that, went to the island of Martinique, secured 500 barrels of gunpowder from the British station there and brought it back to where Washington was headquartered in Philadelphia at the time. And then the next mission, that same ship with John Martin on it, took Benjamin Franklin, who we all know about, who was recently appointed the ambassador of France. Their second mission was to take him to France. And he actually took his grandsons with him over there. And he stayed until the end of the Revolutionary War. So African-Americans have been involved in fighting in this country in every branch of the service since the beginning. We know George Washington had over 700 Black men with him at Valley Forge, and Isaac Walker and Mr. Blue, two other African-American Continental Marines, their names are on the rolls that were with the Black men at Valley Forge. So we've been there, but it's a history that the Marine Corps as a whole never wanted to talk about. So when we say, why don't we know more about it? The Marine Corps hit it. I was a Marine. I served on active duty. And during my 4 years on active duty, I never heard about the Montfort Point Marines. I had went to Camp Johnson did not know the history of the Point Marines. The Marine Corps didn't start talking about and teaching about the Moffett Point Marines until 2011. But you talk about 30 years after I went to boot camp was when they finally start teaching about the Moffett Point Marines. And even today, I will run into Marines today, young and old. I think what last year I was at a funeral and they had some active duty Marines there and from all ranks, from Sergeant Private. And I went to each one, they were standing in line. I introduced myself and asked them, do you know about the Moffett Point Marines? Only one of those Marines knew about the Moffett Point Marines. So one of the things we also do as the national organization is we do raise that with the Commandant about the training and about the education about the entire Marine Corps. Because we know about all the white Marine Corps heroes. We don't hear enough about the men of color who are also
heroes. And I think this is the same theme that we can hear of all the branches, service, all the service branches, how the black involvement was erased, intentionally ignored. And so, you know, I know with the 6AAA, we have a lot of women who went through in service, black women who did not know until later on. And they were right. Quite surprised. So, and I'm sure that if we go to the Navy, we'll find the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you commented that when George Washington was president, he had only up to 700 or more African-Americans
right.
with him in the Continental Army.
Well, in his total command, he had much more than that. But when he hampered out at Valley Forge, and I mentioned that because that's one of the things, you know, that's when we learn American history and the Revolutionary War, we hear about Valley Forge and how significant that was in turning the war. There were over 700 black men with him at Valley Forge. I had a total of approximately 12,000 men and women at Valley Forge. During the Revolutionary War was the last time that America had an armed service that was fully integrated. In fact, the French, who were the allies of the colonists back in those days, helped train George Washington's army. And the nickname they had for George Washington's army was the Speckled Army because of the different colors of right. all the people that were there and the different classes of people that were there. And it's well documented.
So it is curious that in 1796, he appointed John McHenry and allowed him to enact this ban on men of color.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because war ends in 1783, the Revolutionary War ends. The Marine Corps is actually disbanded. The Continental Marines and the Continental Navy is disbanded because we're a bunch of colleagues, very small country. We said, we don't kind of need all this protection. We got the army. By 1796, now we're at odds with France, and the threat of going into France is on the horizon. So George Washington appoints McHenry as the Secretary of War. He's charged with reconstituting the entire armed services. Now the Marine Corps changes its name from the Continental Marines to the United States Marine Corps, because now we're the United States. And that act of no Negroes, mulattoes, or Indians, and signed into law. And this is the same McHenry. If you live in the Northeast and you ever go into Baltimore, you might have went through the McHenry Tunnel. That's James McHenry.
Many times, yes.
That's James. He was a delegate from the state of Maryland, and he's actually a sign of the U.S. Constitution. So, but that shows you the power and influence of the day during that time.
So even when African Americans or blacks were allowed to serve again, the Marine Corps was very segregated. What led to the desegregation of the U.S. Marine Corps in the 40s?
It was not without resistance. I will say that the Marine Corps, the head of the Marine Corps, the commandants of the Marine Corps, had plainly said that the Marine Corps would be an all-white fighting force for America. And in 1941, we have Executive Order 8802 that Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed, which basically ended discrimination and all federal agencies and any businesses that were involved in the war effort. So the Marine Corps was forced now to integrate because of this executive order. And the Marine Corps commander at that time was General Holcomb, who was very clear on his stance. He said, if I had a choice between 250,000 Negroes or 5,000 whites, I'd rather have the whites. You know, he also said that the Negroes had no place in the Marine Corps. But he couldn't defeat an executive order. The sad part is, and so that's signed in June of 41. June of 42, the first Black man enlists in the United States Marine Corps. So it took a year, like any other law, goes into law, and then agencies have the opportunity to get prepared for it. And Alfred J. Masters is the first man to sign, first Black man to sign up in the United States Marine Corps at 12:01 a.m. And as the lore is, there were a bunch of recruiters who wanted to be the first recruiter to sign up a Black man. And that's why it was at 12:01 a.m. But okay, he's the first. In August 26, Howard Perry becomes the first man to show up at Moffett Point Camp in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Now, the significance, and this is the significance of Moffett Point, is that the Marine Corps traditionally only has two boot camps. They have Parris Island, South Carolina, that I'm a graduate of, and they have San Diego, MCRD San Diego. That's the two boot camps. Most of these men, when you talk to them, when they got on buses and trains, they thought they were going to Parris Island, South Carolina. When those buses and trains hit North Carolina, they were rerouted, pulled off, and put on buses and taken to Moffett Point Camp, which was a dilapidated old World War I camp that had no housing, nothing to sustain life there. It was abandoned, and the first two platoons literally built out the camp. Hmm. You know, so think of this, think of the North Carolina swamp with the mosquitoes and the snakes and the bears and everything else we can think of. That's what they came into. So that's the significance of Moffett Point, is that it served as a segregated boot camp from 42 to 49, and 20,000 Black men went through that boot camp, trained, joined the Fleet Marine Force, fought in the Pacific, throughout the Pacific, whether they were in the Solomon Islands or some of the smaller islands that were support sites, but they also fought in combat. Saipan, Iwo Jima, Okinawa, you name it, they were there. And they proved that they were resilient. They proved they deserved to be there. They proved that all Black men deserved a chance to be United States Marines.
Okay, thank you. That was a good recap. Valerie, are there any Moffett Porters still alive?
There are, Kelly, you would probably know better than I how many there are estimated to be alive, but I will say earlier this year, I had the amazing fortune to find, or I should say he found me, the family found me. I did an interview in January of January 15th, leading up to, it was MLK holiday. So we were doing an interview to talk about the ABC documentary that was going to air on Martin Luther King holiday that Monday. And the network decided to air that interview Friday night instead. So the interview aired at 6:15 on ABC. At 6:30, the network received a phone call from a family who said, we think our cousin, who we're the caregiver of, he's 101 years old. We think he's a Moffett Point Marine. We need to talk to Mallory. So I got the phone call, I got the phone number, I called them. And within, 30 minutes, I had talked to the family, confirmed he was a Moffett Point Marine because they had his paperwork. I was in touch with the national PR officer of the Moffett Point Marine Association, who got the paperwork. And from that point forward, the national president of the Moffett Point Marine Association, the national vice president, like everybody was made aware that we have a 101-year-old Moffett Pointer. And the next day, I called the family. Actually, that night, I asked the family, her name is Grace King. I said, Grace, would it be okay if I come over tomorrow and meet your cousin? And she said, absolutely. So the next day, I go to her home And Corporal George J. Johnson is there, and he doesn't know I'm coming, but he's there, and he's got on a Florida A&M t-shirt or sweatshirt, and he's got on a World War II veteran hat, and he's sitting in a wheelchair, and he's kind of leaning, slumped over a little bit. And it's Grace, it's her husband, who's also named George, and a cousin of hers, and her husband. And actually, no, they weren't there. It was George's girlfriend. He had a girlfriend. He was 101. Right. He had a girlfriend.
Oh, he's a Marine.
His girlfriend, she was there. So I walk in and Grace introduces George to me. And I look at him and I said, oh my goodness. I said, you're a World War II veteran? And he takes off his hat and he shows it to me. He says, yes, ma'am, I am. And I said, wait a minute. You're Corporal George Johnson. And he looked at me and the look on his face said it all. This is why I do what I do to try to find these men. But he looked at me like, how do you know? You know? And I looked at him, I said, wait a minute, you're a Montford Point Marine. And then he sat straight up. And I look at his cousin, and now his cousin George is over in the corner, just fully crying. And he looked at me, I said, where you been, Corporal Johnson? We've been looking for you. So that experience was incredible. And then he was awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, a bronze replica. Literally 2 weeks later, we were able to pull together a Congressional Gold Medal ceremony. We found another family. So we awarded one, I should say the association awarded one posthumously. And then Corporal Johnson got his. And that event was on a Monday at noon. We had 250 people show up. We had Florida A&M drove 6 hours to come to Fort Lauderdale, Florida to award this man with a commendation. He didn't graduate from FAMU, but he attended there. And they said, okay, well, he's ours. So they came down, they awarded him that. The Broward County Board of County Commissioners, they all showed up. Everybody, the who's who of South Florida showed up to honor this man. And he knew what was going on. And one of the most amazing parts of that medal ceremony was there was a retired two-star Black Army general that came, and he knew both of these families. So he knew Corporal Johnson and he knew Corporal Williams' family. And they had asked if he could participate in the ceremony. So when it came time to give, there's a document, really beautiful document that the association awards the family or the Montford Pointers, called a certificate of service. So when it came to that time, Major General Monroe, James W. Monroe, stood up, and you could tell the whole energy of the place shifted when he stood up, like you could feel his presence. And he reached over and bent down to give Corporal Johnson his certificate. And this 101-year-old man who was wheelchair bound tried to stand and salute him. And General Monroe said something, whispered something along the lines to Corporal Johnson that he said, even though we served in different branches of the military, he said, I could be because you were. I mean, just incredible. And we lost.
Very powerful.
Powerful. And then we lost Corporal Johnson in July. So we made it just in the nick of time to award him his medal. But that, I'm telling you, that experience meeting that man was so powerful. And at the award ceremony, it was as if he was Beyonce, because people were, it was a little disconcerting, but they were so excited to see this living legend, you know, in front of them. He was getting photographs and every camera was on him. And we had all the newspapers there and little kids from high school. The junior ROTC from his high school actually participated in the medal ceremony. They were also extremely excited to meet him. And that was very touching to see these 16, 17-year-olds wanting to be in his presence, wanting to get a photograph with him. And it was magic. It was magic. And they are magic. The Montford Point Marines are absolutely magic.
So how many have you met?
I've probably met, I'll say 20 or less.
Okay.
And the ones I'm now becoming more familiar with, the one that's probably the most special to me is a gentleman by the name of George McIvory. And he actually served with my grandfather. And when I first met him, he said he remembered my grandfather. And I'm thinking, oh, he might just be saying that to me to make me feel good. Because I think Corporal McIvory is 98. But this past August at the medal ceremony that was held in Jacksonville, North Carolina, which was the largest that Jacksonville, North Carolina has ever had, there were 55 medals presented. And for reference, the prior year, they awarded 13 medals, I think. And then the year before that, there were 3 medals given. This year, there was 1 living Montfort Pointer. And out of the medals that were awarded, I've been researching the men who served with my grandfather. So there were 4 families representing my grandfather's unit, Mr. McIvory, myself. So there were 6, you know, families representing that one unit. And there was an instance where Mr. McIvory met a young man by the name of Mark Garrett out of Ohio. And Mark went over to talk to him. And McIvory said to Mark, that I remember your dad. And at first we're thinking, oh, he's just saying that, you know, to make Mark feel good. But then when we were in the Montfort Point Marine Museum, there's the unit photograph of Mark's dad, my grandfather, and Mr. McIvory is on a wall in the museum. And Mr. McIvory walked up to the photograph and he said, yeah, I remember Junie. Mark looked like he wanted to pass out because no one knew, but that was Mark's father's nickname. He was Marion Garrett Jr. And when he said that, I was like, my God, he does remember him. So there are just, you know, there's so many special and powerful and magical moments that I've had the luxury, I've had the honor, the privilege to experience. And I can just imagine what Kelly's experienced, because he's been involved in this a lot longer than I have. And he's met a lot more Montfort Point Marines than I have. So, you know, I cherish every interaction and every chance I get to meet one of these Marines.
Kelly, you have any special stories to share?
Well, sure. I got a great story. Like I said, I didn't know about the Montfort Point Marines when I was on active duty. I got off after 4 years. I got out of the Marine Corps. About 3 years later, I went into the Marine Reserves. Why I was in the Marine Reserves was a gentleman by the name of Joe Davis. Joe Davis was a Korean War vet, and he was the current president of the New York chapter. I'm originally from New York. And Joe Davis would come out when we had drill weekend. He had a great relationship with the battalion commander, and he would get 5 or 10 minutes in front of the formation every weekend. And he would talk about Montfort Point, but like any young guy in formation, there's only one thing you're thinking about: when is formation over, right? When am I getting out of formation? But I tell everybody the uniqueness of Joe Davis is Joe Davis would actually stay every drill weekend and walk the halls. And as you walk past him, you say, excuse me, Marine, you got 5 minutes? And of course, every good Marine would say, yes, sir, I do. And he would tell you about the Montfort Point Marines. So this has gone on. And one day I'm having a conversation with him. Now we're friendly. And he invites me out to the Montfort Point Marine Ball. And I go to that ball at a place called Anton's in New York. And I walk in there and it's 500 people in there. And they all look like me. And it's the first time in my life that I'm at a Marine Corps ball when I'm not the minority.
Right.
And then by being in the New York area, at that ball, it was about 40 to 50 living Montfort Pointers at that time. This is 94-ish, 95-ish in there. So David Dinkins is there, who's a Montfort Point Marine. John Callender, Ken Rollick, who we named our chapter after, New Jersey. It's all these Montfort Pointers. And that was the aha moment for me. And I immediately joined the association after that. And I've been a life member since the mid-90s when I joined. And that was the powerfulness of it. Now seeing living history in front of me and realizing that, wow, all these men, you know, in their stories you know, I'm standing on their shoulders. And that was my aha moment.
Okay. I want to ask you about the Congressional Gold Medal in a minute. First, I wanted to ask you about something else. So the Montfort Point is in North Carolina, and it is actually on the Camp Lejeune base, isn't it?
Well, that's got to changed over the years. At one time, that was New River, but it's called Camp Lejeune, but it's not on a Camp Lejeune base. It's probably maybe 5 or 6 miles from Camp Lejeune.
Okay, because I was interested because, as we all know, there's a you often see a lot of ads for people about current litigation around cancer associated with the base, and I was wondering how families of Montrose Pointers have been impacted. I was talking to a an associate recently whose father served there, and that associate his father had 9 different types of cancer, the mother 8 different, and he himself 3. And so I was just curious as to whether or not you've heard any connection between cancer and the Montrose Pointers
Well, Martha Point,
related to that, to the service at that location.
yeah, Martha Point Camp and Camp Lejeune, you could say, is an extension of it. But they do share water. They do share water. I can tell you at our national convention this year, we had attorneys that were on that came in and we talked about the whole water issue. And there are attorneys looking at how do we get Moffett Point Camp, which is now Camp Johnson, included in that? I personally know of the son of a Moffett Pointer, Rick Stevens. Mallory, you know Rick. He's the son of a Moffett Pointer. He was born at Camp Lejeune and raised. So he's a military brat, and he talks about some conditions that he has that's listed as some of the effects of the water at Camp Lejeune. And we've been talking about him putting in a claim because he was at Camp Lejeune. So I'm quite sure there's probably some relation there, some connectivity there. But the studies and everything that's been done to show it at Camp Lejeune have not been done at Camp Johnson or Moffett
Okay.
Point.
All right. All I can do is pray. So tell me about the process for the Congressional Gold Medal being awarded to the Montrose Pointers. When did it start? How long did it take? And who were some of the people leading the initiative?
Mallory, we could probably tag team this. So the process started. Let me see. So it was 2012. I think the process started about 2009. No, excuse me, 2012. So about
2007.
2002, I think the process started.
It was when it was shortly after when the Tuskegee Airmen were awarded their collective Congressional Gold Medal. And the story, Joe Geeter, who was heavily involved in that, what he and Kelly, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the story that he shared with me, if memory serves me correctly, was that after the Tuskegee Airmen, after the announcement was made that they had been awarded a collective Congressional Gold Medal, several of the Montrose Point Marines said to Joe Geeter, "Joe, what are you going to do about this?" And Joe says, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, when are we going to get our Congressional Gold Medal?" And Joe said, "I guess I have a task ahead of me."
So you might want to tell my audience who Joe Geeter is.
So Joe Geeter is, man, he wears many hats now, and he's worn many hats over the years. Joe Geeter is currently the National PR Officer for the National Montrose Point Marine Association. He also serves as the president of the Philadelphia chapter. Kelly, you want to tell them some of the other roles that he's held over the course of many, many years that he's been affiliated with the association?
Yeah, so Joe Geeter is our past national president. He's been a past national president. He's been the historian. As Mallory says, he was the Northern Region vice president for the last 9 years. So he served in many different capacities. And definitely, he's a mentor to many leaders that are in the association, including myself.
Yeah, I had a chance to meet him in Philadelphia at one of the ceremonies. And so they will, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I call Joe Mr. Moffett Point. If it's
Okay,
something
yeah.
I want to know, some sort of history, or if I just got to quick question. I can pick up the phone and call Joe and get an answer and keep moving.
Okay.
Hopefully you'll be able to get him on one of these podcasts when his schedule frees up, because
Okay.
he's got, I mean, his mind is sharp. He remembers everything, and he's got a lot of incredible information to share.
Well,
A
I'm
lot of stories.
looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding that only 2,000 medals, approximately 2,000 medals, have been awarded to soldiers or their families. What's the process that you're using for finding the remaining 18,000? I know that you're deeply involved in this, Valerie.
So I think, so for me, I'm very proactive in this. When I found out about my grandfather, it took months, because I was so blown away, and I was so, like, it was so surreal, and it took a minute for my mind to fully absorb, like, the power of what all of this meant. And what I initially set out to do was I wanted to track down all the men that my grandfather went through boot camp with. And fortunately, I have this beautiful photograph of his unit, and all of the men are numbered. And my grandfather kept a list of corresponding names and addresses for all of those 33 men that he served with. So that was initially my mission. And then when I received my grandfather's medal, I just wanted to climb to the rooftops and scream air to everybody that there are 20,000 Black men that, integrated the Marine Corps, and we've got to find them. And I was literally reaching out to different media outlets, anywhere I would think of where my grandfather lived, where he worked. One of my childhood friends, who is a retired Marine, Reginald Moore, he discovered that his grandfather was also a Montfort Pointer. So he and I shared in the medal ceremony together. And so he knew, like, I'm reaching out to everybody. Anywhere Reggie's father, or I'm sorry, grandfather worked or lived, I was reaching out. And sadly, I was not getting the response that I thought I was going to get. I thought everybody's going to be just baffled, like, how's this possible? We've got to tell the story. And I would get a few interested parties. From the media aspect, it was disappointing, because the media that did respond typically were white media. The Black media wasn't very interested. And I'd gotten to one point where I was just trying to get the story out. I kind of put researching for the men on pause, because I felt like if we can get a bigger story out, it would be easier to find them. And
Right.
I know the association does a lot of interviews. And so Reggie reached out to another childhood friend of ours. We're from Marion, Indiana, and her name is Latondra Newton. At the time, she was the chief diversity officer for the Walt Disney Company. And when Reggie reached out to her, she was as blown away as I was. She was just like, how is this even possible? So she reached out to Deborah O'Connell with ABC, and Deborah reached out to her race and cultural content team. And then Reggie and I were connected with one of their executive producers, Portia Grants. And Portia started actively following kind of Joe Geeter around, because she lived in the Philadelphia area. So she covered a lot of his medal ceremonies. And then ABC went to Jacksonville for the museum reopening, and they filmed that. We did not know they were actually in the process of filming the documentary that now airs on Apple TV, Prime, Hulu, and it's on the internet. But they were filming. And then I kind of knew something big was happening, because they flew someone to Florida to film at my house.
Okay.
And then the final filming they did was at the 80th anniversary Congressional Gold Medal ceremony last August. So that documentary, which is called Our America, Mission Montfort Point, that has been very helpful. For me, I actually sit down at the computer, I pull up muster rolls. Or now actually what's happening is people reach out to me and say, oh my gosh, I think my cousin's grandfather was a Montfort Pointer. This is his name. And then I dig into the research, and I find that person. I find them on a muster roll. I help the families get the information they need to request their report of separation if they don't have it. And as soon as we get it back, the process is I get all the information, I feed it to Joe Geeter, and then Joe takes a look at it. And then when he determines that this is, and actually, when Joe looks at it and when he says this looks good to me, that's 99% certainty that this person is eligible for the medal. And then he forwards all that information off to the national leadership, and then they do their magic. And then the families are notified and a medal ceremony is arranged. But I love doing research. I've been doing genealogy since 1999.
I know you helped me out with some things with the 6888. So I appreciate you helping me find a descendant of the one of the only three soldiers who died in Europe. And so that was great.
And that is the one of the most exciting things to be able to do, is to find that information or to actually call someone. One of the grandsons, the first person I reached out to, his name is Troy Russell. And I found Troy. Troy's grandfather served with my grandfather. So if you're looking at the unit photo of my grandfather's photograph, my grandfather is number three. And I think Troy's grandfather is number four. And I found Troy, and to this day, I don't know how I found him, but I found him on social media. And I remember it was a Sunday in January of 2022, and I Facebook. And I know probably somebody asked him questions if his grandfather served in the Marine Corps. He would like respond with, you know, closed-ended responses like no or yes. And this went on for a few minutes. And I finally said, Troy, your grandfather served. He was one of the first Black men to integrate the Marine Corps, blah, 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 blah. And Troy didn't believe me. So I actually had to send him an image of his grandfather in the boot camp photograph. He'd never seen this. He'd never seen any images of his grandfather in military attire. His grandfather didn't talk about it. I even had his grandfather's autograph in my grandfather's blue book, military yearbook. So when I have been able to call someone and to break that news to them, there is nothing like that, you know, and that keeps me going. That is a reward in and of itself. So Troy actually got his grandfather's medal this past August. And so, just to be able to do that is an honor.
So does the Marine Corps not know who the 20,000 are, or is it you're just trying to find living relatives of those 24? So, and I ask this because I know the 6888 only had 855 women, but even then, there's still some that could not been identified. And so I'm wondering, 800, why wouldn't the service know? So I'm just curious if you had the same issue with the Marines.
So Kelly, I'm going to throw this back to you, but I've been told that just because the Marine Corps didn't want us and they didn't keep good records. So I have, there are muster rolls on Ancestry, but the muster roll does not prove that right. that individual actually completed boot camp at Montford Point Camp. And so I don't know. I mean, I've heard criticisms that the Marine Corps should be doing more and so on and so forth. I honestly would love the Marine Corps to print off every single muster roll for those 7 years and store them somewhere so we can access them. But I don't know. Kelly, what is your take on this?
I think it's a couple issues here. I think one of the issues absolutely is, if you look at the time and what was going on, the Marine Corps wasn't friendly. In fact, General Holcomb, Commandant at the time, thought it was going to be an experiment. They never thought that this would come, you know, to pass the way it is today. They thought it'd be an experiment. The Black men would fail horribly, and that would be the end of that. We know that they have records because when we send to the National Archives, we get records. Whether there's one collection of records that they can easily send a list, I don't think that exists. I don't even think that exists for white Marines, to be quite honest. I think it's a collection of different records at different places within the National Archives. And I know there's been conversations with Headquarters Marine Corps, with the Commandant, and I know at this time they're not looking to produce a list to give to us or anyone else at this time.
So if anyone out there in the audience knows them, or they think they know a Montford Pointer, who should they contact? How do they make contact?
So I would say, and Joe has become my best friend. Like, I jokingly call him my BFF right now. And we've kind of figured out a very good process to make this happen. And anybody that knows me and the work that I've been doing over the last almost 2 years about this knows that for me, time is of the essence. And when somebody calls and says, hey, I think my cousin's grandfather's brother was a Montfort Point Marine, I stop everything. And in fact, I don't work anymore because my husband, when I found out about my grandfather and I really started digging into this, and I told him, I said, you know, I think I'm going to go back to work. And he was like, wait a minute. I think you have a different calling right now. I think this is your calling. And for that, I'm very thankful because I do feel like this is the purpose that I've been put on this earth to fulfill. And I'm doing this out of honor and respect for my grandfather and the other 20,000 grandfathers that are out there. So, you know, folks can reach out to me. Either if they reach out to Joe Geeter or they reach out to me, Joe's going to hear from me or I'm going to hear from him. So I highly suggest, and what I do is, if a family thinks that they have a Montfort Pointer or they know someone, just give me the name and I will do all the digging I can and I will help them get their paperwork. And then we'll get Joe involved and then we'll get, you know, once we get the paperwork and we can confirm that they served or they completed boot camp at Montfort Point Camp.
So how do they contact you? The phone number, website, the email
they
address?
They can contact me via email at, my email address is mallory1908@gmail.com, and that's mallorie1908@gmail.com.
Okay.
And just to be clear, a family member can contact anyone in an association. They could go to our national website and leave a message. I did a gold medal ceremony this July for two twin brothers from Richmond. And that's because someone went to our website, the New Jersey chapter website, left the message. He was in Arizona. It was a nephew in Arizona that left the message, and the process works. So I followed up with him.
What's the web address? What's your...
Oh, MontfortPointMarines.org.
www.njmpma45.org.
That's a mouthful.
New Jersey Montfort Point Marine Association 45.org.
Okay. And so I've seen another website, MontfortPointMarines.org. Is that also a good place?
Yes, that's another great place. That's the national website. Yeah.
Okay. So we probably ought to spell Montfort. It says MONTFORD and then pointmarines.org. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So now we've talked about the association just a little bit, but let's do a little deep dive into the Montfort Point Marine Association. Want to talk about its mission and who are the members? I mean, what are the membership requirements? Can anybody, I'm not affiliated with them, can I come and join? So let's start with those two things.
So the Montfort Point Marine Association is a veterans organization, nonprofit veterans organization that's open up to all members of any branch of service. So that's just one thing to be clear. You don't have to be a Marine. In my chapter alone, I have Coast Guard, Navy, Army members in my chapter.
So women and men?
Men and women, yeah. Okay. My chapter is full. We're not a Black Marine organization. We're open to all people of all colors. And my chapter is the speckled chapter. So, you know, we are open. And we have to be clear with that because a lot of people just hear it and they think, oh, it's Marines. And then when they hear, you know, our story, what our mission is, they say, oh, it's Black Marines. No, we're veterans. If you have a passion for what we're doing, we encourage you to join us. Our number one priority and our number one mission is finding these men. We've been able to find about approximately 3,000. We know there are approximately 400 living Montfort Pointers across the country. As Mallory stated, they're getting old and we're losing some, but we're finding some. So that's our numbers. But if you have a passion and want to partner with us, come join the organization. If you're not a veteran, you can join our organization as an associate member of any chapter. Also, we have an auxiliary. The auxiliary is open to anyone who's not a veteran either. So you don't have to be a veteran to join the auxiliary.
So what's the difference between the auxiliary and being an auxiliary and being an associate member?
Okay. The big difference is that if you're in the association, you are a veteran. The auxiliary, when it was first started, it was started as really the family organization, right? Family members, wives. We're now, you know, we're the year 2023 now. So it's kind of morphed into an auxiliary organization within the association. And it's open to men and women again, and you do not have to be a veteran to be a member of the auxiliary. If you want to help us, if you want to serve, we have a spot for you. And that's what I want people to know. We have a spot for you. You can fit into this association. If what you're hearing tonight excites you, if you want to know more, contact Valerie or myself. We work together. I think I met Valerie, a year ago or whatever? It might have been less than.
We met through an email.
Right. It's through an email. And we've been rocking and rolling
ever since. Yeah.
So the best way to contact you is through the web address that you mentioned earlier?
Yes.
Okay. So what year did the association start?
1965.
Okay. And there are how many? Go ahead.
The history of the association was a group of Marines, Moffett Point Marines. Most of them on active duty at the time, or I should say not most of them, but a good majority on active duty, just decided, hey, let's have a reunion for all the guys that went through Moffett Point Camp. It started as, let's have a reunion. There's so many guys out there. They scheduled it in Philadelphia, thinking they would get 40 to 50 people to show up, and they got over 400. And once they had over 400 men there, for this reunion, they said, hey, we got to do something about this. And they formed the association.
Okay. And so how many chapters are there now?
We have 47 chapters. 26 of them are active at this moment. And we have, I think it's 3 chapters on the horizon for induction.
And so the chapters are all over the country?
Spread across the country. And some states and areas, it may be more than one chapter, especially North Carolina, where Camp Lejeune is. You know, there are several chapters. But in New Jersey, there's one chapter, and we cover the entire state of New Jersey.
And so there are about how many members association-wide?
About 1,300 members.
Okay. Right. So I want to talk a little bit about each one of you. You're both deeply committed to the legacy of the Montreport Porters, Mallory as a descendant and advocate, and Kelly as a Marine Corps veteran and advocate. So I want to learn more about your educational and career backgrounds. So Mallory, I know you're you have a 20-year career in finance and currently serve as executive director and consultant for a nonprofit in Florida. Please share more. And then you can tell us what that 1908 is about.
So
in your email address, yes.
Born and raised in good old Marion, Indiana, first generation, not born in the South. And I am a graduate of Indiana University and graduate of Florida International University here in South Florida. Have degrees in economics and finance. I spent a lot of time in banking. And one of the things I stumbled upon in banking, never ever had any idea that I was good at teaching people. And which is a shocker to me, because when I learn something, I don't just learn that topic on a superficial level. I really dig deep into it. And so I was a branch manager at one point in time, and I knew I was in a economically depressed neighborhood. All Black people were my clients, all Black staff, and we were struggling, and I just took it upon myself to learn everything I could about everything, every role that my teams played within the organization. And then I wanted to make them the best that they could be. And so senior level executive at the bank at the time found out about that from me, or about me, and said, you know, I think there is a role for her that's bigger than what she's doing. And that would be an opportunity where she would actually touch the 15 state footprint that we operate in. And for me, it was fantastic because that meant I could travel. I could travel all the time. And I was traveling all over the country and I was doing training sessions. And I absolutely loved it. I absolutely loved it. And for me, it was the ability to see people, to teach someone to do something, to help them to be successful. And then for them to call me to say at some point, you know, Mallory, because of what you taught me, or the little extra that you taught me or you showed me, I was able to do this and I was successful and I'm ranking and I'm doing this, that, and the other. And that kind of is the same thing with what I'm experiencing with Mom for Point. Currently, I still serve as an executive director for a small not-for-profit in Hollywood, Florida. It's called Hollywood's Diamonds in the Rough, and it is a children's golf program. It's been around for almost 25 years, and it is designed to introduce to children who typically would not have an opportunity to experience a golf course, a club, to expose them to those opportunities. And typically our children are Black and brown, and they come out to a golf course in Hollywood, Florida. Every summer they come out and they learn the basics of golf, but as they're learning just an introduction to golf, we also have lessons that reinforce some key characteristics that things they already know, but we just kind of tie that into golf and expose them to a world that they may not be able to have access to because of the cost. You know, it's prohibitive from a cost standpoint. That I still do, but I'm really focused on the Montfort Pointers. And I'm also working on a project for my hometown of Marion, Indiana, to try to kind of resurrect some of the history of the Black citizens of my town. My town has a very big blemish on it. And when people talk about Marion, Indiana, they only really focus on that really sad part of history, where there was a significant lynching that happened there. So I've partnered with several of the people that are in Marion, and we're trying to tell the stories of Black Marion that people don't know.
Yes, because
so that's another.
Like you, I went to IU, and so Marion, Indiana was infamous.
Yes. And we're trying to overcome that because there's so many, I mean, that's part of the history, but there's so many incredible Black individuals that came from Marion that nobody knows about and that nobody talks about because we only talk about the lynching. Even when I found out about my grandfather, I'd reached out to my hometown radio station, and the response was, we've already told that story. But then that next month, during Black History Month, they're talking about the lynching. You've talked about the lynching 500 times, and one time we have a good story to share, you don't want to tell that story. Yeah. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay. And so, Kelly, in addition to being a Marine Corps veteran, you have a 30-year career in management. You run an IT consulting firm. I would love to hear more about your eclectic career. Well, Mallory, you didn't tell us about the 1908.
So let me tell you about the 1908. I am a legacy of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. My beloved mother, she's a Golden Soror, Ivy Beyond the Wall, Alice Burns Marshall. I feel like I came into this world knowing that I was going to be an AKA. I'm an AKA, my sister Tori is an AKA. And then I like to say that my family likes to be first. And I attribute that to my grandfather being one of the first Black men to integrate the Marine Corps. So that's where the 1908 comes from.
Okay. And it's funny how we first connected through Colonel Cummings, I saw the email address. I said, Mallory, 1908. I said, one of those Greek organizations, one of the organizations was founded in 1908. So then I kind of looked you up and said, oh, okay, she's an AKA. I was like, why else would she have a 1908? I said, I didn't think that was a street address.
Anyway. No, it's not.
So Kelly, Tell us more about your education and career.
Okay, I give you guys the short story. I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. When I was very young, grew up in East New York. And if you know anything about New York City, that was a very impoverished place to be. I tell people I didn't know I was poor until I went into the Marine Corps, because I had just about as much as everybody else, you know, that I grew up with. I wasn't lacking anything. We all had what we had, and it was all the same. But I went in the Marine Corps at age 17, graduated high school, went in at 17. It was my thought at the time that I would, you know, make that a career. But I did four and got out. When I got out the Marine Corps, I actually went to a business school in New York. What was it? Computer, what they call it at the time, computer programming, whatever it was. But that was the front door that allowed me to get a security job. Because if you're a Marine and you back in the early 80s, and you apply for any position, I literally went in for an interview and the lady said, "Oh, you're a Marine. We got a job for you, security." And I was like, "No, I'm here for the computer." She's like, "No, if you want a job today, you can do security." And I said, "I want a job today." So what happened with that is I was working for a security company that actually had a contract with Chemical Bank in New York. And I ended up getting assigned to their world headquarters. After a year of working there with their security team, they offered me a job. And that was my introduction into corporate America, and the rest is history. I was with Chemical Bank for 10 years, 7 years at Merrill Lynch, 7 years at HP. And then I finally got out of finance and worked for insurance company called Guardian Life. And in 2014, I said, you know what? I think I want to do my own business. And I started the company there, an IT consulting company. And we've been going strong since that time. I've held every position in IT, starting on the help desk to when I was at Merrill, I was running the global email environment. So it's been a lovely career. I've been blessed. And I'm the type of person, if you put something in front of me, I can learn it. I can do it, and my strong suit is creating systems. If it's something you got to do more than once or twice, you could probably put a system together around it, and now it's just an easy chore. And I've followed that through life. I'm a licensed life coach, an executive coach. I'm a follower of Les Brown. Probably that's where I started getting involved in my speaking career, when he was on the radio outside of Washington, and I would go down to Washington to his conferences. So,
and I understand you're a licensed minister also.
I am a licensed minister.
That's why it's referred to you as having an eclectic career.
Right. But right. It's all speaking, it's all leading. It's kind of all that skill set. Right. And I'm just blessed and with everything that God has given me and the positions he put me in to allow me to utilize all the talents he's given me. So I'm excited about what we do at the Martha Point Marine Association. That's why me and Mallory just kindred spirits from the first time we talked. And she's just really helped expand what I do. And finding these families, and we're going all the time. And how many requests do we have at the National Archives? How many have we got back? You know, I have 3 gold medal ceremonies scheduled, you know, for the remainder of the year. And I got one person I'm working on that I'm trying to find, but we help other people too. And so, you know, we're just beginning. Mm-hmm. I know the association has been around since 1965. I will tell everybody, you're going to hear more and more about the National Martha Point Marine Association. We are just beginning the quest. We have 17,000 families to find, and there are people in our association who are just like me, who are like-minded, and that's our mission.
So who funds your association? I mean, when you give these medals out, the families are not paying for them. Association.
Absolutely not. Families don't pay for anything.
And they're $160 each now?
Well, I like to get the case with it, so it's 200.
Okay.
I'm
And
not giving you just that.
so how is this? I know you're a nonprofit.
But we're a nonprofit organization that people can make donations to us at the chapter level or at the national level. That's how we get our funding. And like any other nonprofit organization, there are probably members within the association and within the chapter who believe in the mission. And, they also make donations
They
too.
go the extra distance
Right.
to make it
So
possible.
we're the New Jersey chapter just started in 2020. New Jersey, state of New Jersey, never had a chapter. I'm one of the co-founders. We stood it up in 2020. So we have a core group of individuals in our chapter that believe in what we're doing, and we're excited. We're very excited.
I'm wondering, you both are dedicating a lot of your life to this, and there are many other relatives, like Marilyn, and there are many other Marines, and they're not involved. So what inspires each of you? It has to be something that, I mean, you have infinite number of things that you can do and that you have done, but something inspires you to do this work, to dedicate yourself to this work. And to keep going, as you have, I mean, with 17,000 families out there, it's not like you can finish it tomorrow and say, okay, we're done now. So this is a life work.
Well, I'll start with me. I think it's a combination of things, right? And it goes back to who you are. I like to say you're the sum of all your parts. In school, even when I was in elementary, I was always a history buff. I loved history. The Moffett Point Marine story is a part of history. And it's not just Black history or Marine Corps history, it's American history. So when I tell the story, I make sure the story is told from a historical perspective. So I talked about some things tonight about our history and name some names that people can connect to. But that's kind of been my method of sharing this information. And when you do that, when I mention George Washington or the McHenry Tunnel or all these other things that people know of, there's an instant connection. Because I want people to feel connected to us. I want people to understand that the Moffett Point Marines have been here, even though they haven't been talked about. And just so that it's more accepting. And that's what I find. It becomes more accepting. I cannot tell you how many presentations I've done, whether it's in a school, at some sort of civic event, wherever somebody's invited me to. If you invite me, I'm coming to do a presentation. But people in the audience who have come to me after I've given a presentation and said, wow, I didn't know that part of history. And that's what excites me. Sharing that history excites me. And also, once you do one gold medal ceremony, you want to do 17,000 of them. I'm telling you, Doc, you want to do 17,000. I know I'm not, but it's exciting. That's what drives me, is I can wake up on any moment and find a new family or a new Moffett Point Marine to work with. And like Mallory described her first experience going to the house, it's like that every time, all over again. It's a high. It literally is a high.
Yeah,
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was a little girl. I mean, I was 4 years old and I was watching In Search Of. Like, I love that show. And I wanted to be an archaeologist. Well, I didn't fulfill that goal, but this to me is kind of the same thing a little bit because I'm digging into history. And it's more than just finding the families. I want to tell the stories of every one of these Moffett Point Marines. And not just tell the stories. I want every one of their names to be spoken. I want their faces to be shown because it's not just, like I said, the medal. There's so much hidden history. And as I have journeyed, like Joe, I'm learning so much from Joe about the Marine Corps, and I'm learning so much from him about Moffett Point. And then I stumble upon all these other Black units that served during World War II. And it is mind-blowing that all of these Black men and women supported the United States during World War II, and nobody knows their stories, nobody knows their names. And for me, it just breaks my heart to know that my grandfather fought for this country, served for this country honorably, and died and was never recognized for it. He never talked about his experience. He never once mentioned the name Montfort Point. Not that I ever heard. I have three siblings. None of them ever heard it. My uncle, who was still alive, he never knew this. I mean, I think he knew that his father was away in the military, but he didn't put two and two together. And I know I was very close to my mother, and we talked a little bit. And I think the only thing she really said to me was that her father, my grandfather, enlisted when he was in his 30s. And I said, well, why would he go to the military when he's in his 30s? And she said it was a hope of a better life for his family once he got out. I don't know that he ever realized that. But I will tell you recently what I've been working on. There is going to be a medal ceremony in New Orleans on November 12th and 13th. And it is a big deal because there are seven families being recognized. Seven Montfort Point Marines being recognized, all posthumously. Six of the seven chartered the New Orleans Montfort Point Marine Association chapter. One of them is named Granville Alexander. Granville Alexander and his wife and two young sons were tragically killed during Hurricane Camille in 1969. The chapter was subsequently renamed in his honor in 1970. So the chapter had been looking for next of kin since 2000 to give him this honor. So they couldn't find him. Well, I found the family. Like 2 weeks later, after starting to look for them, I find the family. They're out in California. And in talking to them, they didn't know any of this. So they don't know anything about their uncle's time at Montfort Point Camp. They really don't know a lot about his time in New Orleans because they were all young children at the time. So one of the things we are working on are biographies. And it took me about a week to do the research on this man. And I wrote the biography for him. And his family looked at it. Kelly just looked at it yesterday, and a couple of other people set eyes on it. What I wanted to make sure was revealed was what this man did during World War II. Not just that he was just a Montfort Point Marine. I want people to know this is what he did. And so that's going to be the theme for the other six families, is I'm having to research to figure out what were their what do you call it, Kelly, MOSs?
Right.
What were their jobs? What were their responsibilities? Where were they stationed? Where were they assigned?
So you're getting this from the National Archives?
No. So what I'm doing is... I do have, so we have all of their discharge paperwork, and it's not a DD-214. Back then, they didn't have DD-214s. They had report of separation. So I have all of their reports of separation, and then I've gotten their muster or their list of duty stations. So, and I'm looking at muster rolls. So I'm looking at every one of these Marines' muster rolls to find out where they were stationed, and having to research to find out, well, what did that unit do? Where were they? Because nobody knows this information. And I think it's very important that people are made aware of what they did to serve this country.
So is a muster roll something unique to the Marines, or do all the service units have muster rolls?
I would imagine all services have it.
As I'm trying to track down some of that same kind of information, I was in touch with the archives today. I have the separation records like you do, but I need to know what I don't have is different places where they were stationed and what they did at different locations. And so I'll be in touch to see what you've got up your sleeve there, Mallory. So, but I think one of the things we all have in common here is this commitment to talking about these hidden stories, making hidden figures, and making sure they don't get lost, because they will get lost if we don't dedicate, if someone isn't dedicated to trying to tell these stories out, get these stories out. Which is why I have you guys on here today. And then, you know, we're looking forward to interviewing some of the other legacies. So speaking of using the word legacy is timely in this podcast, because I was going to ask, what do you think is the legacy of the Montfort Porters? You know, when you kind of step back and look, what is their legacy?
Kelly, I'm going to defer to you, because it's, for me, I'll just say this. It's so overwhelming because there's so much and there's so much I don't know. Every day when you talk about these men, it seems like they're hidden in plain sight. And when you talk about, the more you talk about them, the more you find them. And so it's just so much, it's so overwhelming. Just the number of Marines and their stories and what, you know, there's a living Montfort Pointer, Hubert Burks, who is in Chicago. And I had never spoken to him, but then one day his daughter called me and said, my dad has an assignment for you. I said, uh-oh. So everything stops. Montfort Pointer has something they want me to do. What you want me to do? So during his time overseas, he was living, his quarters, he was living with five other Marines. And apparently someone, they don't really know who, someone threw a hand grenade into their, I don't know if it was a tent, but wherever they were living. And one of the Marines was killed by that hand grenade, and another one was injured. So Mr. Burks wants Mallory to track down one of these Marines because he wants the family to know what happened. So that was the gist of the story. So I said, well, how am I going to find these people? So I asked his daughter, Angela, I said, well, who are the Marines that your dad is looking for? Well, of course, nobody knows first names. They only either know nicknames or last names. So the names I was given.
No, that was better than just knowing the first name.
Right. So I got Pat Williams, Nappy Headed Nelson, Geechee Brown, Jennifer, and I can't remember who the fifth one is. So I'm like, okay, how am I going to track these people down? Well, it turns out the one day I was looking for the name, it dawned on me that these are last names. These are not first names. And I found two Marines, Montfort Point Marines, with the last name of Jennifer. And I found one of the enlistment cards. And on the back of that enlistment card, it has identifying characteristics. And handwritten on that card, it says large mole over the left eye. So about a week later, I reach out to Angela and I said, you know, when you get a chance, I'd really like to talk to your dad. And he got on the phone. And later Angela said, she says, I don't know what you said, but my dad talked about things he's never talked to anybody about before. He was so animated. And he said to me, he told me the story and he started talking about Jennifer. And I said, well, I don't know which Jennifer it is. Is John or Joseph? He said, well, Jennifer had a big mole over his left eye. So now I know who it is. But also in talking to him during that same conversation, and Kelly, you'll have to tell me the name. I can't remember the name of the Japanese general, maybe.
It was an admiral, but I don't remember the name.
Admiral. So Mr. Burks started telling me a story about how during his time, Nakashita?
I just don't remember.
He said that when he was overseas, and one of his assignments was to guard this Japanese admiral. And he said, what is the likelihood that they would have put me in charge of him or to guard him? Because I want to say it's Nagashita. That sounds right. But anyway, this Japanese general came from a very well-to-do family and apparently had graduated from Northwestern University. And Mr. Burks is from Chicago. So he said he and this general or this admiral became very good friends because they were talking about, you know, their love for Chicago and whatnot. And, you know, I was thinking about the story and I mentioned it to somebody and they were questioning the authenticity of that story. They're like, oh, you know, they make up things. Well, lo and behold, I looked up this admiral and he actually was, he was captured because he had killed 89 American civilians on one of the islands during World War II, and Mr. Burks was guarding him. And just, you know, just to have those kind of stories. So for me, and I know I'm kind of going off a little bit, but the legacy is, it's so much. It's, for me, I want their names to be known, their stories to be shared. And it should be, we should get to a point where everyone knows the Montfort Point Marines, like they know the Tuskegee Airmen, like they know the Buffalo Soldiers. I mean, there's so many other units. I think they all need that same notoriety. Kelly? Okay.
Legacy. I think, and I'll start off with this, I think the history of the Montfort Point Marines are not as well known as some of the other units because the Marine Corps didn't even talk about it. Remember I said the Marine Corps didn't start teaching this until 2011. Well, by 2011, there were shows on TV the Tuskegee Airmen, the Buffalo Soldiers, and all that. So when you say, why don't we know about them? The Marine Corps did not formally talk about the Marfa Point Marines until 2011.
I never heard of them until I met Mallory.
Right. And like I said, you might meet a Marine this week, and he's never heard of Marfa Point. Because if he got out before 2011 or even after, that was just at boot camp. Now it's actually a PME course, but it's a voluntarily PME course. So they hear about it in boot camp, but you're learning everything in boot camp. You're going to retain what you retain. There's a PME course, but it's voluntary.
What is PME?
Say again?
What is PME? It's an acronym.
Primary military instruction.
Okay.
So they have a bunch of PME courses that you take. It could be finance. It could be anything.
Okay.
But that gives you like...
I just wanted my audience to know,
Yeah, so it's like extra credit.
Okay.
And stuff like that. So when we're talking about legacy, and it's not just the black-white thing, we have to dispel that myth. Because when the Marine Corps said black, they were talking about a color. Right? You have Hispanics that are black. You have people from other races that have this melanin in their skin. So it wasn't just the black thing. Once the Marine Corps was segregated because of what the Moffett Point Marines did and their efforts and their resiliency and their ability to outperform others and perform just as well, it opened the door not only for black men, American men, but all minorities and women. There were no black women in the Marine Corps until 1949. So they opened the door for all people of color. So any person of color that's in the Marine Corps today, they're standing on the shoulders of the very first men of color of the United States Marine Corps. And that is their real legacy. It's not just black. They opened the door for all people of color and they changed the Marine Corps forever.
They're civil rights activists. They're civil rights activists and they didn't even know it.
That's a powerful way to wrap up tonight. Mallory and Kelly, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and for sharing the amazing stories. I'm very grateful. And as I said, Mallory, I'm going to have you back on to talk about your grandfather and his legacy.
Thank you.
I like to close each podcast with a favorite reflection. And so normally I'd come up with something that's particular interest to me. I think it's tonight, I'd actually like, Kelly, for you to share a reflection from the Mantra Fort Marines. I think that it's another very powerful way to, I think this is from... General Leonard Chapman,
yes,
Jr., the 24th Commandant of the U.S. Marine Corps.
Yes. And this is taken from Moffett Point Marine Memorial that's located in at Arlington National Cemetery. And this placard is there. And it reads as such. The footprints of the Moffett Point Marines were left on the beaches of Roy Namur, Saipan, Guam, Peleliu, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa. The tides and winds have long ago washed about into the seas of history, but the chosen few in field shoes and canvas leggings also left their marks in the firm concrete of Marine Corps history. And as new generations of Marines learn to march in those footprints, their cadence assumes the proud stride of the men of Moffett Point. General Leonard F. Chapman, Jr., 24th Commandant of the United States Marine Corps.
Very powerful. Thank you so much for joining me tonight and for sharing.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
To my audience, thank you for listening to Next Us 818 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nextus818podcast@gmail.com. That's nextus818podcast@gmail.com. See you for our next show on Wednesday, October 18th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, New York City Podcast Network, and Spotify for Podcasters.